Frank, Hayes, and JJ.
Hit it!
It's time for The Frangie Show on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
All right, welcome in. Frangie Show, draft night. It's here, finally. We've been waiting, and now we're just mere hours away. Hayes Carlion, JJ LaSalva. Frank Frangie getting ready for his draft coverage starting at 8 o'clock tonight. So that'll be great. And please be joined with Ryan the Hacker Green. Hack, how you doing?
Hayes, I'm good, man. Appreciate you guys having me in. And yeah, finally, you know, all the blood, sweat, and the tears we've put into this microphone for weeks and months at a time to talk about tonight. And finally, after tonight, we won't have to say Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold and Byron Murphy and Brian Thomas. I mean, on and on and on and on. We'll probably have to say one of those because one of them likely to be a Jaguar.
Hopefully.
We won't have to talk about the same, you know, 10, 15 guys like we have for the last 3 or 4 months.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have a loaded show today. Mark Long, who covers the Jaguars for the Associated Press, is going to join us in about 10 minutes. We will also have Ryan O'Halloran, who covers the NFL for up in Buffalo. Covers the Bills, but has covered Washington, obviously was here for many years covering the Jaguars, has covered the Broncos, and he's in Detroit. So he'll give us a sense of what's going on in the Motor City as they get ready to host the draft. And then at 5:30, our good pal Michael DiRocco, D-Rock, will join us at 5:30 to give us some final thoughts from his perspective on what's going to happen tonight. So again, 2 hours, all draft. That's what we're doing here. And we're going to give you as many perspectives as we can as we get closer to this thing. And before we get started, Hacker, I want to say, man, congratulations, because we don't bump into each other very often because of our schedules. But, man, fantastic job on the weight loss, and just congratulations. You look fantastic, and I'm sure it's got to be, you know, a thrill for you.
Oh, man, I really appreciate that. Yeah, 55 pounds so far.
That's awesome.
And I started on February 20th.
Wow.
So we're about 9 weeks in, 9 weeks and change, 55 down. Still some to go. I'm not celebrating yet. But, no, the good folks at Awaken 180, absolutely fantastic. They have basically changed my life.
Yeah.
I mean, not to get too deep on you early on a draft day here, but 55 pounds is no joke in 9 weeks. And I cannot possibly thank those people in that program enough.
Good. That's awesome. Well, again, man, congratulations. And let's just start with, you know, how do you see this thing? Obviously, there's a number of ways this could go. What, in your opinion, is the best case scenario as we sit, you know, 4 hours before this thing gets fired up?
For the longest time, I had a big caveat tonight because everybody, Hayes, was talking about corner and wide receiver. And I agree with that, and I'll get to that in a moment. But my caveat was always, if Jared Verse is there at 17, the idea of Trayvon Walker, Josh Allen, Eric Armstead, and Jared Verse to me would be too good to pass up. And I was on that train for the last couple of weeks on Hacker After Dark, and I was, you know, saying that time and time again. I am a Jared Verse guy. But as we've gotten to this week and you really look at the roster, there is a need at corner. I mean, that is their biggest need. I don't think their biggest need is wide receiver. I'm higher on Gabe Davis than other people are. They don't have a need at rush end. They don't necessarily have a need at offensive tackle. I think they have a need at corner because I don't feel comfortable right now playing an NFL game with Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, and Darnell Savage as my top three corners. And if Terrion Arnold from Alabama or Quinyon Mitchell from Toledo are on the board at 17 tonight, that is the direction I would go. Now, if both of those guys are gone, that's a different conversation. But if you tell me I can get Arnold or Mitchell, preferably Mitchell, but I would take Arnold as well, that's where I think the Jaguars should go tonight.
I completely agree. That corner, to me, if everything fell perfect tonight, then either Quinyon Mitchell or Terrion Arnold. And I don't have a huge preference either way. I really like both of them. I think that's an A-plus day for the Jaguars if they stay at 17 and get one of those two.
Do you buy that Quinyon Mitchell, this is what I've heard from a lot of people, Mitchell fits Ryan Nielsen's scheme maybe a little better than Arnold?
Yeah, I mean, I it's hard for me to know that, having not really seen Ryan Nielsen here yet. I think from a skill set standpoint, I think they both fit. You know, so certainly they will have a preference if both are there, and that would be fascinating to see. I don't think Arnold and Mitchell will both be there at 17, but I do think one of them will be. And you know, I think in looking at it, I don't get a sense that it's going to be overly swayed by that. What I keep coming back to is, and it's what you alluded to, Ronald Darby cannot be a starter here. That's not a good plan. And it's nothing. He's had a nice career. It's nothing against him. It's just where they are right now. You have to assume that you're opening week one at Houston. You probably aren't, but you have to assume that that's where this thing is headed. C.J. Stroud, the Houston Texans, how are you going to stop them? And again, I still have confidence in Tyson Campbell, but I don't have much confidence in a secondary where Ronald Darby is the starter opposite him. And, you know, to me, you're talking about that doesn't rotate. I mean, that is 1,100 snaps. If that corner is healthy, they are out there for 1,100 snaps this season. And there's really no other position tonight that I think is a need where that volume of work is going to be there. Like, I'm with you. I love Jared Verse as a prospect. I'd have zero problem with him. Zero problem with Dallas Turner if he falls. Byron Murphy would be great. If they want to go offensive line, I certainly get it for the long term. I'm not sure how much it helps you immediately unless there's an injury to one of the five. All those guys would be rotational pieces. Brian Thomas at receiver 17 would be a rotational player, wouldn't be out there, you know, every snap. The corner would be. So, I mean, in what feels like a win at all costs year coming up, it's hard for me to fathom seeing Arnold or Mitchell there at 17 and saying, nah, you know, we're good, we're going to hold off.
Well, and the wide receiver thing, too. Look, I agree they need to get a wide receiver either in round two or round three. To me, tomorrow night is where you go get a wide receiver. But go back to 2022 when this team made it to the divisional round of the playoffs. You had a healthy Zay Jones, a healthy Christian Kirk, and Marvin Jones. And then you had ETN and Evan Engram. Well, it's the same cast of characters, except you've switched out Gabe Davis with Marvin Jones. One would think that's an upgrade. So everybody's freaking out about Ridley not being here, and I get that. But in 2022, this team won because Christian Kirk and Zay Jones were healthy. They were not healthy last year. So we never really got to see Ridley, Jones, and Kirk all on the field together. That's unfortunate. Hopefully this year we get to see Kirk, Jones, and Davis on the field together. And I agree, if you spend a first-round pick on a Brian Thomas or an A.D. Mitchell or whomever, fine, that's great. Maybe you cut Zay Jones loose, but to me the much more pressing need is at corner. Now, having said that, if Arnold's gone and if Quinyon Mitchell is gone, I think the conversation changes. Because I don't know if Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, or Cooper DeJean are worth the 17th pick in the draft. Do you try to trade back? Well, what happens if you can't trade back? That's a whole different can of worms. The Nate Wiggins thing, I get the vibe, Hayes, I don't know about you, the Jaguar fans would be totally against that. And yes. I don't know why that is. The only thing I can compare it to is I did not want the Jaguars to draft A.J. Terrell. From the same college, right? Mm-hmm. Clemson. For whatever reason, I just did not want A.J. Terrell coming here. A.J. Terrell's pretty good, right, with the Falcons. He's certainly not bad. So I think be careful when you label a guy for whatever reason, and I'm not sure why Wiggins has been labeled. Maybe it's his size.
I think it's the fact he's so light.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. But, again, I'll tell you who loves Nate Wiggins is Lewis Riddick. On ESPN, just raved about Nate Wiggins for like 5 minutes yesterday. So – there's going to be some pros and cons to whomever they draft tonight. I do wonder, though, if the top two corners are gone, what they would do at 17 in that situation.
So let's talk about a wild card scenario. Let's say the corners are gone, Verse and Turner are gone, and Murphy is gone. At that point, would you pull the trigger on Brock Bowers if he's there?
Ooh. that would be interesting. Man, you just spent a second-round pick on a tight end last year. You gave Evan Engram big money. I mean, if you pick Brock Bowers, Brenton Strange is a failure after 1 year. That's a failure of a pick, and I don't know if Balky would be willing to do that. I don't think Bowers will be there, but I like your hypothetical. I would probably say no because, again, and here's another thing too. Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen are two studs, I think. Allen's a stud, and I think Walker will be. But what did we talk about the entire year last year? There's nothing behind them.
Right.
Right? Nothing behind them.
And really still isn't.
What did they do?
Yeah.
They went out and got Trevis Gibson. Okay. He had 10 sacks combined in 21 and 22 in Chicago. But that's it. I mean, you're going to have the same narrative nobody behind Walker and Allen unless you do draft somebody. One of those ends is going to be there. Either Verse will be there, Latu, who apparently is falling from UCLA, will be there, or you mentioned Dallas Turner. If both corners are gone, I think maybe you do take a deep look at defensive end.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, well, let's bring in our first guest again for the Associated Press, Mark Long. JJ, fire it up for us.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
What's up, man? How are you?
Hey, doing well. I thought I was going to get like some intro. I thought I was going to like have a cool song or something. I get nothing.
You're coming in the middle of the segment, so that's how this is working. How about that?
You're
having a run-in.
How about I hang up the phone? How about you give me a little love, Hayes Carline?
Well, you know, when the wrestler runs out, like in the middle of the match, their music doesn't hit. They just come in and deliver some great content, and then they run out. So that's what we have booked for you today.
I immediately thought of Shad Khan running out last night. That's exactly when you say when the wrestler runs out, I thought of Shad Khan's face when he's running out to check on Tony.
Now here's
my question. What a franchise.
Well, here's my question. Will Tony Khan be in full character tonight? And will he have the neck brace on in the war room? That is the question.
Yes. Show up with a neck brace and a cane and dark glasses to hide the bruises. Yeah, for sure. Play it up.
Wouldn't it be great if like Tony Khan had a bodyguard? And Hacker, you'll have to help us with the AEW wrestler, but or the roster that they have. But I would book this. Tony Khan is in the war room. He's got a bodyguard with him.
Chris Jericho's there.
Jericho's there.
Yes.
And then the guys that attacked him last night storm into the war room, and we've got chairs flying while Doug Peterson and Trent Baalke are trying to, you know, figure out who they're going to take. Now that is entertaining.
Hey, they did that with Urban Meyer.
They did.
I would be down for that. I'd grab the popcorn if you could convince Trent Baalke to smash a chair over somebody's head.
I'm sure we could make that happen, but
I'm sure Trent would be all for that on draft night.
Yes.
Have you ever spoken to him? Yeah, he's a little tighter strung
tightly wound.
Than that.
Yes, yeah, no doubt about it. Much. Well, you've covered a million of these things, so what's the feel that you have as we now are just a few hours away from getting this thing kickstarted?
Yeah, it's funny. We went 14 of 15 years. They're picking in the top 10, most of those in the top 5. Back-to-back number ones, and now it's like, man, 17, you're waiting around all night, right? So it's different. I think it's a lot harder to predict when you're sitting there in the middle or the end of the first round because so much could happen. Somebody could fall. Somebody couldn't. I heard you guys talking. I think you guys hit it. I think those two cornerbacks, Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold, I think they're 1 and 1A. The guys on their board, the guys they kind of expect to be there at 17, but don't be shocked. Listen, I'll say this and I'll say it again. I don't believe Trent Baalke wants to take a 190-pound guy or 180-pound guy or even a 200-pound guy with his first-round draft pick. That is not who he is. That's not his DNA. That's not what he thinks this league's about. It's not the way he was brought up under Bill Parcells, all those guys. He is absolutely adamant that this is a big man's league. And you win by drafting big guys and building on the lines of scrimmage. So, you know, sitting there at 17 and all the mocks have, you know, little guys going around him for the most part, I wouldn't be stunned at all if he pulled the trigger on a Byron Murphy, if he's sitting there as a defensive tackle, especially if those two cornerbacks are gone. If he goes Byron Murphy, maybe Jared Verse. Or the wild card, I think, is Latham, the offensive tackle out of Alabama. I think he is absolutely the wild card to watch. I know some people got him going in the top 5, certainly in the top 10. But if somehow there's some run on receivers and quarterbacks, what if 6 quarterbacks go in the top 15? Then all of a sudden somebody's going to fall. And I would say that if it happens to be Latham, and he's sitting there at, 10, 11, 12, I would not be stunned at all if Trent Baalke's trading up or at least scrambling to try to trade up to grab this guy as a plug-and-play right tackle, and then all of a sudden they move Anton Harrison to left tackle, and I would guess Cam Robinson is all of a sudden trade bait for maybe a day 3 pick. I could see that scenario, knowing what I know about Trent, knowing that they're looking at their offensive line and they go, okay, we got two guys not under contract beyond this year when you're talking about Walker Little and Cam Robinson, and as well as Anton played, I know they think he could go play left tackle and be a seamless transition. So I wouldn't be stunned if they go that direction. You certainly can make a case that they need a cornerback, they need interior defensive line help, and they need offensive tackle for maybe plug and play this year, but certainly looking down the road.
Mark Long of the AP here with us on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Mark, that's interesting, potentially trading up for an offensive tackle. We saw Trent Baalke trade back a couple of times last year, end up with Anton Harrison and accumulate some picks. The problem is the picks they got really didn't materialize into very much. So when you trade back, you'd like to take advantage of those extra picks. I guess my question is, if the board does not fall their way, they are not able to trade up, and if both of those corners are gone, Arnold and Mitchell, do you see Baalke getting on the phones and trying to get back a little bit and maybe take a McKinstry or a Nate Wiggins in the mid-20s of the first round?
Yeah, and I actually think that's probably worst-case scenario, right? Like, if somebody doesn't fall, if one of those cornerbacks is gone and maybe Murphy's gone and Lance Latham's gone, and all of a sudden you're sitting there at 17 going, do we want Nate Wiggins, 170 pounds? Do you want him at 17? Do you want Cooper DeJean, who's you know, a little bit of a tweener? Is he a safety? Is he cornerback? Do you want Kool-Aid McKinstry, who's not necessarily a great man cover guy, supposedly? I just know there are question marks with those other three cornerbacks. I do think that would be in the cards. But then the question is, does somebody want to come up? You always got to have somebody willing to come up. And who are you going to come up for at 17? You would think maybe a quarterback would be in play there, but they might also be, six of them might be off the board at that point. So then what? So I do think, you know, if you have to, worst case scenario is not trading down. Worst case scenario is you stuck at 17 and not having anybody on the board you really like there. Trading down is always, you know, trader Trent, right? He wants to trade down, add more picks, whether it be for this year or next year. So that is absolutely got to be in play. What's interesting is he's been very open about the possibility of trading up. So that tells you that they've got some guys they think might not be there at 17. So he's clearly made trading up at least, you know, a strong possibility.
Do you think there's any chance they go up to 5-6 here and try and get Harrison Neighbors, a guy like that, or maybe 9 if Odunze is still there?
I think this with receiver. I think they go, but they look at last year and how much better did Calvin Ridley make them, right? They took a gamble there, end up losing a pick. They weren't a better offense. Now I know, you know, anybody, you can point to injuries at receiver, injuries at quarterback, issues at center, the offensive line. There's a lot of reasons for that. But I think when you look at what they were in 2022 with Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, and Marvin Jones, they were a really good offense, especially down the stretch, right? And they think they can get back to that with Gabe Davis. So I don't think they see receiver, especially even those guys, you know, those guys are, you know, I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is a game changer. Certainly some of those other guys too. They looks like the deepest receiver draft in years, maybe even decades. But I think you look at those and then, yeah, you know, you can also get a complimentary guy in round two. And given what they've got with Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk, can be fine moving forward. I don't see them. I don't think they see that as a huge priority, that where they got to move into the top 10 and give up a lot of capital. Cause I don't even know if they can move up that high, just giving up the two, right? I think they could get to 10 maybe with the Jets by giving up that second round pick, number 48. I think they could get to 10. I'm not sure they can get up any higher than 10, especially when there are other teams out there looking to move in the top 10 to get a quarterback. I just think the asking price is going to be too much. And I don't think they see that as such a huge need. I think they're willing to roll the dice, improve the offensive line, keep Trevor healthy, and roll the dice that you'll be back to late 2022 offense with Christian Kirk healthy, Zay Jones healthy, and Gabe Davis basically subbing for Marvin Jones.
I mean, Mark, to me, tonight gets all the headlines, right? The first-round pick. But Balky has been very good with his first-round picks. Now, granted, number one overall, Trevor Lawrence, Trayvon Walker. But Anton Harrison was a very good pick, obviously. So, and Devin Lloyd, the jury's still out. I don't hate that pick yet. So, but second and third round, he's been awful. I mean, just terrible, including last year. And it's too early to judge. I get it. But it was a bad rookie year for Brenton Strange and Tank Bigsby, Chad Muma, Luke Fortner. I mean, it has not been good in rounds two and three. And they have five picks in the top 116, two fourth-rounders included in there. So tonight is vital. But, man, tomorrow and early, early Saturday, Balky's got to be better than he's been in years past.
No doubt about it, Hacker. You're right on. He knows it. He said as much, you know, that's really the big weakness right now. They haven't landed late round picks. They haven't even landed second and third round picks. Guys, you know, you go back to the Dave Caldwell. I thought Dave did a really good job of, he wasn't good in the first round, but he was really good in mid rounds and later rounds in the second and third round. So that's where you've got to improve. If you're going to build this roster, build it for the long term, you got to hit on some of those guys. You got to find, you know, the diamond in the rough. You need to find yourself, you know, an Aaron Colvin. You need to go find yourself a Telvin Smith. You need to go find yourself, you know, go back way back, you know, Rasheen Mathis, Greg Jones, Daryl Smith, all these guys, second round studs who played a long time, got second and third contracts with this franchise. That's what they need to do to really get this thing back to where they're not having to fill holes via free agency.
Mark, final thing here. Give us a prediction. Who will be a Jaguar tonight?
Yeah, I still think one of those cornerbacks is going to be there. So to me, it'll be Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell. I don't have a preference. I think both of them are plug and play stars, future, you know, shutdown, lockdown corners. So either one of those. I'd be surprised if it went any other direction, though. I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be mildly surprised. I think those two guys, one of them will be there. But I won't at all be shocked if they pass on all those other guys to go get a big man.
Great stuff. JJ, let's give Mark some music as we say goodbye to him.
You smell what rock is cooking.
This is your guy, right?
Yes, of course.
You guys, you met him at the Daytona 500, right?
Yeah, I did. I got a picture with him, yeah.
Very
my
cool.
Kid was so good. Yeah.
Very cool. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Right.
I'll look forward to seeing you over there in a few hours.
Sounds good.
All right. That was Mark Long of the AP, one of our good buddies, covers the Jaguars, Gators, does a fantastic job, and we really appreciate his insight. All right. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our good friend Lee Smith, executive director of the Players Championship. We got to talk some Scotty Scheffler. That's up next on The Frangie Show. You're listening to 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Time now for the tour update with Players Championship Executive Director Lee Smith.
Keep an eye on this one.
Presented by Sunshine Turf, the highest quality artificial turf at affordable prices.
All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Ryan the Hacker Green, JJ LaSelva, I'm Hayes Carline, and we're pleased to welcome in our good friend Lee Smith, Executive Director of the Players Championship. So great to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Absolutely, thank you. Beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. Well, if the Jaguars pick at 17 is as good as Scotty Scheffler, we'll be a lot of happy fans around here.
You know, 17 is a pretty cool number, right?
It is a cool
17
number.
Means a lot to us.
Yeah.
And, so, yeah, important pick tonight for sure.
Absolutely. Do you have a favorite like draft story, or will you be locked in tonight?
You know, I actually went to the draft once. I got invited by Matt Ryan, was a friend of mine when I lived in Atlanta. So we went up to the draft maybe two or three years into his career there. We mixed in some golf. We played Bethpage Black and Wingfoot, and went to a bunch of the draft festivities. It's a blast, kind of a takeover of, you know, at that time, New York City.
Absolutely. So, you know, in terms of looking at Scheffler, obviously we've talked about his greatness now for several weeks, but to go win the Masters, refocus, not have the greatest start. I mean, it wasn't bad, but I think he was 2-under after Thursday. And then just to get scorching hot again and win again, what did that tell you about his mental toughness and his concentration?
I'll tell you, we've talked about it a bunch. I mean, the perspective that he holds and is able to perform, obviously with a wife at home and mom and dad with him and all of those types of things, and to do it week in and week out. I think Justin Thomas probably said it the best, is that he plays a boring type of golf that, you know, you probably would say that he hasn't necessarily had his A game in winning a couple of these events also, which is certainly scary. But, I mean, he's just on a run like any other. I was surprised to hear that in his last 50 events, he's got the 10 wins, but he hasn't won an official event after tax day.
Isn't that weird?
So after April. So he's got all of his wins in 4 months. So we'll see if that changes this year.
I mean, if he wins another tournament or two in the next couple of months, we're in Tiger territory, right? For what Tiger did in a 2 or 3 month stretch, the best 2 or 3 months of Tiger's career. I mean, Scottie Scheffler would almost equal that at this point. I mean, that's the kind of historic run he's on right now.
I certainly think, Ryan, over a couple of months stretch, absolutely. I think I saw the numbers the other day that if Tiger were to have the same year, I think it was 2000, in 2024 with the same purses, he would have won $95 million or something like that. And Scottie's at $18 million. So for the stretch of a full year, he certainly has a long ways to go. But over these 2 or 3 months, I mean, it's been unbelievable to win 4 out of 5 times, you know, a major, a signature event, and a Players Championship. You know, that is a run that equals just about nobody.
Feel for Colin Morikawa too. I mean, that guy's played ridiculously good golf the last couple of weeks, but he just can't beat Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah. Do you like the team format with what they're doing at Zurich, where they pair up?
I think it's fun. I think the team format a couple times a year with two players, and the fact that it kind of replicates, you know, a President's Cup, being that it's a President's Cup year, you know, replicates that type of championship. I think it fits, you know, very, very well. I think it's fun to see a few sets of brothers down there. Certainly fun to mix in alternate shot. I mean, that is a hard, hard format. Not near as hard for, you know, professionals at their level to shoot under par. But, yeah, I think it's cool to mix in. And I think the way that they've done it, you know, I think New Orleans is a great match. I think having walk-up music is a great match. I think the way that they've really embraced it, I think, is really cool.
And, look, Scottie Scheffler, I mean, people are going to watch golf, right? But people are now watching for Scottie Scheffler. I found myself locked in last week, and I've never seen a situation, and, again, I'm a casual golf observer most of the year. I'm really into the Players and the majors. But to have guys literally on the 72nd hole have to pick up the ball and go back to Monday and finish it there was interesting to me. And I watched the entire 5-day period of it, and I think as Scheffler plays in more and more events and as the tour gets more popular with Tiger now being on the sideline, Scheffler's going to be the guy leading this thing for the next couple of years, is he not?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the way it seems to be shaping up. I think what he needs is a rival, right? Yeah. He needs the Rorys and Jordans and Justins to raise to his level to even, you know, continue to make the game even more popular and eyeballs matching in. I mean, you can imagine if he and Rory are going shot for shot down the stretch of an event, whether they're playing together or not, you know, I think that's going to be important going forward.
In terms of looking at where we're headed, obviously Scheffler will now take some time off before the PGA. And we'll have you in, obviously, a couple times between now and the start of the PGA. But can you give us just an overall sense of Valhalla and what kind of venue the PGA is going to be played at? Because obviously it's been in the rotation at least a few times.
Yeah, great, great golf course. You know, used to be owned by the PGA of America. Rory's won there. Tiger's won there. I want to say Mark Brooks may have won there. But, you know, that being said, it's produced amazing championships. Rory's was a really good one. You know, you could argue that the Tiger Woods, Bob May, Valhalla Championship was, you know, one of the best golf tournaments with, you know, in a playoff and that type of thing of all time. So I think it'll be a fun venue for people to play. It's been out of the rotation for a little bit. And so it'll be interesting for some of these young players that have been around, you know, 4 or 5 years that maybe haven't played there, how early they go and getting themselves accustomed to that atmosphere.
And we're now firmly in. It's been a few years now, more than a few years, one big tournament a month, March through July. Is the schedule working? Is it doing what they wanted it to do with Players, Masters, PGA, U.S. Open, Open Championship?
Yeah, I anecdotally, I think other than a bunch of these rain delays and maybe having to finish on Monday or that type of thing, some places, yeah, it's nice to have a season of championships kicked off by the Players' Championship in March, a major tournament going through the summer, and then bookended by the playoffs in August. And those types of things essentially get done before football, ramps up and eyeballs on the weekend start to divert elsewhere. But yeah, I think it's working. We'll see. There's a narrative out there that ratings, depending upon the tournament, are down a little bit. Which certainly there's an acknowledgement of people being a little bit tired of money talk and all of those types of things, which I think there's an acknowledgement for that. But at the same time, there's so many more different ways that aren't able to be tracked as well as linear ratings. I think golf is in a really, really good place. There's a lot of people playing it. Perfect World there's some uniting that needs to happen eventually and come back. But I think the schedule of where these major tournaments are, hopefully Tiger can get healthy and play in all of them and compete. But, I think the schedule works pretty well.
And cool to see that report that Tiger, Rory were among the higher players getting loyalty bonuses from the PGA Tour, to see that new investment money kind of at work.
Yeah, look, it's an exciting time in the game of golf. In that, imagine just the kind of transformational nature of players having ownership in their own league. That's obviously a first of its kind to have this many players, a couple hundred, that will have ownership in their own league, that, that they can be fully aligned with the leadership of the tour into what the future holds. There's no CBA. There's no, those types of things don't exist like other leagues. This is, say, I'm actually an owner in the league. I think it's a pretty cool time.
As we get closer to the PGA, a couple of tournaments upcoming, give us some young guys to be on the lookout for leading up to the PGA Championship.
Yeah, it's, certainly it's hard-pressed to not think about Ludvig Åberg. He's just impressed so many people through Augusta. Obviously, at the signature event at Harbor Town, that leaderboard looked very similar to Augusta with Morikawa and Åberg and that. It'll be interesting to see these how these Cootie brothers play here at Zurich. There's just so much young talent that's coming, and sometimes I think we it's interesting how we disseminate who's young and who's not. Is 25 old in the Hovland, age, or, are we looking at those college players that just come out of college? Because now, you're starting to get into a part of the schedule where, some players that maybe we haven't heard of as much will get some starts. So I think it's an exciting time.
You brought this to our attention last week, but what a story, Miles Russell, how well he performed, 15 years old, obviously a local phenom here. And now gets a chance because of that great performance to continue it and go to Texas and see what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, tied for 20th, shot 66 one round. And before that, won the junior players, won the junior PGA. Just looks like the future is massive for him. And to get another start, I think only is going to help his his future and his resume. And I think I read, is it Blades Brown? That another 16-year-old that just got another exemption and a start. So it's getting younger and younger, that's for sure.
When's sort of the peak of a professional golfer, but also where you really start to see a young golfer, a teenage golfer's game really hit another level? Is there a sweet spot there?
I think it probably, differing from tennis, like tennis, it feels like there's a range that, this is when you're at your peak. I think golf is just a little bit different for everybody. Certainly going out, learning the horses for courses, what courses, what California swing, Florida swing is going to favor me. How do I mature traveling by myself and unpacking and packing and all of those types of things? But I think one thing's for sure is I feel like, you know, started with Tiger, but it just keeps getting younger that, you know, there isn't as much of a maturation period on the PGA Tour. There's, say, I'm ready to win now. And I won as a kid. I won as a collegiate player. There's no reason where I can't go out there and win now. And I think that's, you know, the cool part of the future.
Great stuff. Lee Smith, Executive Director of the Players' Championship. Who do you want to see the Jaguars take tonight at 17 if they stay there?
I'm with both of you guys. I think we got to go corner. I think Terrion Arnold would be a good pick for us to walk out of there, and then you know, maybe get a receiver in round two or three that will pop up and provide some benefits for us.
Love it. Lee Smith, great work. Really appreciate it. All right, we'll be right back on the Frangie Show. Get back to the NFL draft. That's coming up next. You're listening to 1010 XL 92.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Ryan the Hacker Green, JJ LaSelva. I am Hayes Carline with you. Let's get it kind of reset here. Hacker's going to fill us in on the latest scuttlebutt going on in terms of the NFL draft. We're going to have Ryan O'Halloran joining us in about 20 minutes to talk NFL draft, and then D-Rock will join us at 5:30 to give us his perspective. We then have Into the Night with Rick Ballew from 6 to 8, and then our Jaguars draft coverage anchored by Frank Frangie, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Loggeman will start at 8 o'clock and take us through until probably about midnight. So lots of great programming coming up for you as we get excited about the NFL draft. Hacker, what's sort of the buzz that's out there that you're seeing?
Now, it's 3 hours before the draft, so obviously a lot of rumors, a lot of smoke. Who knows where there's actually fire? Todd McShay, as an example, tweets out moments ago that what he's hearing, he listed two teams that are intrigued about trading up for Georgia tight end Brock Bowers, one being the Indianapolis Colts, the other being the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you alluded to that earlier, which is interesting. Another report, Diana Rossini of The Athletic, says Chicago is open for business at number 9. Of course, they're going to draft Caleb Williams at number 1. They also have the 9th pick in the draft. They're open for business, looking to get out of there. We'll see if anybody comes up with a big enough offer to move up into the top 10, whether that be Jacksonville or whomever. But I think the big story, at least for our audience, is the Brock Bowers side of things. I don't believe Bowers is going to be there at 17, and I'd be interested, Jaguar fans, your thoughts. Hit us up on the text line, 641-1010, designed by Lifetime Enclosures. If they were to make a move for Brock Bowers, okay, it's interesting, right? Him and Evan Engram, to me, that Brenton Strange pick would be a fail already. I mean, you took a guy in the second round last year. Again, rumor season, who knows, Hayes, how much of this is actually true or not. But when a guy like Todd McShay says Jacksonville trade up potentially for Bowers, it is certainly something to talk about.
That would be one of those things that if you're going to do that, I will be shocked if they do that. But if they do that, you better come up with something offensively that on a regular basis, the opponent is walking to the sideline during the season saying, with obvious body language of, we don't know how to stop this. I can see, yeah, if Evan Engram and Brock Bowers are on the field at the same time, I don't know how you match that up. Do you view that as a heavy personnel grouping? Like the on paper you would if it was double tight ends. But they're also gifted receivers, so do you stay light and nickel? And then if they decide to run, obviously they have the advantage there. So if they end up going this route, it's going to take something special that's going to have to be produced to put that much value into the tight end position, to allocate that number of resources, to have obviously a high-salaried player in Engram, a first-round pick that you're trading up for to go get. So it's not just the first-round pick. You're also giving up probably the comp third, I would imagine, at the very least. And you've got Brenton Strange, who, you know, is pretty well-rounded. At least, you know, that was sort of the book coming in. So maybe he could still have some role, you know. And then obviously when you move on from Engram in a year or two, you've got, you know, Bowers and Strange. But it would be puzzling to me the only thing I'll keep coming back to is you want to get the pick right, and there's no such thing as a sure thing, but Brock Bowers does seem to be the closest thing to it probably in this draft of a player where the floor for Brock Bowers is that he's a top 15 tight end. If he obviously lives up to the billing, maybe he's a top four tight end.
And the only reason he would even be there at 11 or 12 anyway is because all the quarterbacks that are going to go. I mean, you think about the very beginning of this draft process, every mock draft you saw had Brock Bowers in the top five. And then he started going down a little bit to 7 or 8. I don't think he gets past, say, 12 or 13 in an absolute minimum. So if Jacksonville wants to do that, and again, there are reports out, but there's reports on everything. There are, you know, the Brandon Ayuk stuff is still out there, and I don't believe any of that until it actually happens. So what are you willing to give up to get Brock Bowers? And if you mention the comp third, well, okay, then you take Brock Bowers, and then you have one pick left in the top 114. And you have so many needs on the D-line, so many needs at corner, needs on the offensive line. I like the rumor. I like the conversation. But I like you, Hayes. I would be, what's a good word besides shocked? I'd be flabbergasted. How about that? If they trade up for Brock Bowers.
Yeah.
I think it would be a good pick. I just don't think it's what this team needs to do tonight.
I actually think Bowers is going, I've got Bowers going 7th to Tennessee. I think he goes much earlier than what a lot of people expect.
Titan fans would lose their minds in a negative way over that.
Really?
They want Joe Alt.
Yeah.
Because Will Levis is going to die behind that offensive line.
Yeah, and I get that. But they've done some things in free agency. And, again, it wouldn't be their only pick. But, again, to help Levis, give him a guy like Brock Bowers, who in 1.4 seconds is probably open somewhere.
That's fair.
I just think, again, it, a lot of times it just comes back to – It's hard to knock him for he just looks like such a ready-made pro. So anyway, I think I'm kind of with you. I don't think it happens, but part of that's because I think he's off the board earlier than maybe some expect. So it's going to be fun as we look at it. One thing that I want to get into when we come back from break is the trade down scenarios. I think at 17, certainly they could move up. It's what makes this Jaguars draft, I think, one of the most unique ones that we've covered, is the range. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if you told me that they pick 6th tonight. Wouldn't be shocked. I don't think they're going to. But, I mean, I could see them making a move up to get Neighbors if he was there at 6, and the Giants were willing to move back, or whoever, if the Patriots come down from 3 to 6 and were willing to go back again to collect even more draft investment. So, I mean, I could see it being as high as 6. I could see them not making a pick tonight. So we've talked a lot about the trade up scenario, and Trent Baalke said at the draft luncheon that, look, we're probably going to let 12 guys come off the board before we really start to have those conversations. So, but it still feels like, to me, the range of where this pick could be, I don't know that we've ever seen anything like it.
No, I agree with that. The one thing I would say, too, they signed 3 free agents 30 years old or older. Why would a general manager sign 3 guys 30 years old or older? Probably because he knows he needs to win in 2024. He wasn't signing 24-year-olds, all right? He was signing Mitch Morse and Ronald Darby and Eric Armstead, guys that have been 9, 10, 11 years in this league. So I think if the Jaguars make a pick tonight, I believe they will. It's a pick that needs to play and needs to contribute in year one. You're not going to draft. And that's why the Brian Thomas thing to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense now, because you said it earlier and you're spot on. Brian Thomas, how often is he going to be on the field? He's not going to be on the field 100% of the time, 75% of the time, with Christian Kirk and Gabe Davis and Evan Engram. And we'll see about Zay Jones. A corner would be on the field a majority of the time. A Jared Verse type would be on the field a majority of the time. Dare I say a Brock Bowers would be on the field a majority of the time. Whoever they pick tonight is going to play and play a lot in 2024, because I believe Trent Baalke believes he needs to win this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Great points. All right, when we come back on the Frangie Show, we are going to keep on breaking down this NFL draft, getting you ready for it. We're going to talk about possible trade back scenarios for the Jaguars and see if Hacker thinks that would make some sense. You're listening to the Frangie Show here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the Frangie Show. Hayes Carlion, Hacker, JJ LaSelva here with you, getting you ready for the NFL draft. Hacker, you brought up something really interesting in break. Peter Schrager, who's got a pretty good track record with this stuff in terms of mock drafts and certainly being connected throughout the league, he threw a curveball this morning. Xavier Worthy being the selection at the 17th pick, the Texas speedy receiver, obviously a 4-2-1 at the combine, but incredibly undersized. That would really shock me tonight.
Yeah, I was surprised. And like you said, Peter Schrager, you talk about mock draft guys, Peter Schrager is one of the better ones for Good Morning Football and NFL Network. And all of a sudden you see Xavier Worthy of Texas to Jacksonville at 17. That was an eye-opener, right? That got my attention. So I looked around, and I couldn't really see another mock draft that had Jacksonville going Xavier Worthy. So obviously Peter Schrager heard that from somebody. Now, whether it's a smoke screen, whatever it is, he wouldn't have just conjured that out of thin air. He got that from somewhere. I would like to be at Everbank Stadium tonight when pick 17 is announced at the podium. If Roger Goodell goes up there and says the Jacksonville Jaguars select Xavier Worthy, because I can imagine the reception to that pick here locally, Hayes, would probably not be positive.
Yes,
I think is a good way to say it.
I think that would be a good call. Again, not that this is everything, but Dane Brugler, who certainly is a respected draft analyst, he has Worthy as the 50th best player in the draft.
Yeah.
So I mean, somebody that theoretically could possibly be there at 48. I don't think he'll be there at 48 because I do think that the speed will attract some team. In the second round, maybe you see him come off the board late tonight. But and I'll give him credit. He didn't miss a game at Texas. He turns 21 on Saturday, so very young kid. But, boy, 165 pounds. He does not give you anything in terms of a contested catch. So, I mean, he's got to be open. Now, obviously, with that speed, you're banking on that he would be and that defense would have to honor, obviously, the deep ball. But and he was productive, great punt returner, 197 receptions for 2,755 yards and 26 touchdowns as a collegiate. So, I mean, all that's great, but boy, to me, that just screams luxury pick.
One thing that I have not understood since free agency, and I mean this, do I think the Jaguars have the best wide receiver room in the league? Of course not. But I have a lot of national guys on Hacker After Dark, and, I ask them PFF and all these guys, Jaguars' biggest needs. And they always go corner, and then second's always wide receiver. I agree the Jaguars need to draft a wide receiver round two, round three. I don't agree that it needs to be in round one any longer. I thought that for a little bit, but I have lost that thought in about the last month. And the reason I lost that is, again, I look at that room. Christian Kirk, Zay Jones, when healthy in 2022, were both 80-catch guys.
Absolutely.
They had, 12 touchdowns between the two of them. You add Gabe Davis, who has never had less than 6 touchdowns in a season, and he just turned 25. Parker Washington, you saw glimpses of last year. And people tend to forget Devin Duvernay, all-pro returner, he is an actual receiver. Jamal Agnew was a defensive back that converted to wide receiver after he got to the National Football League. Duvernay, for about a month in 2022, was the number one option in Baltimore because of a couple injuries that they had. Now, I'm not saying Devin Duvernay is going to, light the world on fire at the receiver position, but if he's your 5, you can do a lot worse than a Devin Duvernay as your 5th wide receiver. So I don't agree that the Jaguars have as big a gaping hole on the roster at wide receiver is what I get told pretty much nightly on Hacker After Dark.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Gabe Davis is going to play great football here. I do not believe the void between what Calvin Ridley would have given them moving forward and what Gabe Davis will is going to be light years apart. In fact, there's going to be, I think, in certain areas, improvement that you get from Gabe Davis moving on from Ridley. And, yeah, I mean, look, Christian Kirk is an exceptional Jaguar. Zay Jones, when healthy, has been very clutch. Duvernay, when Duvernay is out there, it's not a gimmick. It was a little bit of a gimmick with Agnew, and he was doing his best. But how often do you see at this level somebody go from defensive back to receiver?
Right.
It almost never happens. And so I don't mean that as a slight to Agnew, but it felt like there was more of a gimmick element to the offense when he was out there because he was just limited in what he could really do, whereas Duvernay has been playing it his whole life. So, it does. I mean, we talk about the math when you project the 53 and, you're not going to, you get to 6 receivers, it's hard to, create room for a 7th and 8th and vice versa. So, I think receiver should be selected at some point. But I would agree with you that, you know, taking Xavier Worthy at 17, when I have to imagine you're passing over some combination of one of Arnold, Mitchell, Verse, Turner, Murphy, you know, to me, that's, you know, that's difficult. Because I do think you're going to see six quarterbacks go. I think the Raiders are taking Penix. I think the Broncos are taking Nix. I just don't think these teams can afford to wait. And obviously, we know the top four are going to go, you know, it, maybe the top four picks, but certainly in the top six, you would imagine. So in looking at it, even if Minnesota gets McCarthy at 11, if they stay put and McCarthy falls, I think Nix could go next and then Penix right after. And if that happens, I mean, if six go, if you're the Jaguars at 17, there is going to be a great prospect there for you that fits as well. Value, need, all fitting up there at 17.
Yeah, quarterbacks going before 17 are a good thing tonight. You want as many quarterbacks to go as possible. And the thing about Jacksonville, they have eight picks if they don't make any trades. Eight picks overall. Five of those picks are in the top 116. Those are good players. Those five guys need to contribute in 2024. And if you tell me any combination of those five picks, I get a corner, I get a defensive lineman, I get an offensive lineman, I get a wide receiver, and then for the fifth pick, maybe another D lineman, maybe another O lineman, maybe a tight end, I'd be fine with that. But if any order, corner, wide receiver, O-line, D-line, I'm going to be very happy. They need to hit those four positions in the first five picks, and if they do that, it's going to be hard for me not to give them two thumbs up.
Well, and that's why I think trading back, if they can find a partner, does make a lot of sense. If they can be patient and see how the board falls and then get to 17, particularly if Arnold and Mitchell aren't there, you know, I've got four scenarios I think make a lot of sense. The easiest one is the Steelers want to come up to 17 to get Brian Thomas, so you move down three spots to 20. The Steelers have two fourth-round picks, 120 and 121. That would make a ton of sense. It would give the Jaguars seven picks in the first 121 selections of this draft, which would greatly help them. I mean, again, this is a roster. Every roster is like this, but the Jaguars are starting to get there as well, where you need a lot of players on rookie contracts. Mm-hmm. I mean, particularly you're getting ready to give Trevor Lawrence this astronomical deal. So, you know, in a couple of years, that's going to kick in. You want to have as many guys going into their third year on a rookie deal as you can. So I like that move. You know, it could be something maybe 10 spots down with Arizona, where you're going from 17 to 27, you pick up Arizona's high third rounder at 66, you know, something like that. And then again, I could see them trading out of the first round with Carolina or Washington. So, you know, to me, that is something I think they'll explore it. I'm not trying to say I think they should. I am confident they will explore it, and hopefully they can find a partner.
Well, and let's just hope, because they did that last year. Balky traded back twice. Unfortunately, the picks they accumulated did not do very much in their rookie years. Now, you can't judge a rookie class by 1 year. If you move back, that's great, and you accumulate picks. But let's actually pick some guys that do some stuff on the field this year.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, let's bring in JJ, our good buddy Ryan O'Halloran.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line. Here comes the money. Money, 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 money. Money.
Business is picking up in Jacksonville. Ryan, how are you doing?
My God, he's been assaulted.
Oh, man. Are you ready? Let's give us the scouting report on Detroit. Obviously, you're there to write columns for the Buffalo News and cover the Bills. Give us the landscape. You got to Detroit, what, a day or two ago?
Yeah, I got here yesterday and did some reporting yesterday. Cold and went over the NFL experience today to write an early column. One thing I wrote about for tomorrow's paper, because, you know, for the early editions, is you could criticize the NFL for a lot of things. You can't criticize them for moving the draft around the country, because it used to be just a television. Now it's a television and fan. And you saw every jersey, past, current, long-time players, and yeah, it feels like, you know, this is turned into, you know, an event for the league, and not exactly a money-making thing, because the admission is all free.
Ryan O'Halloran here with us. Ryan, good to talk with you as always, brother. And look, the thought is going into tonight, a lot of trades, right? But I feel like we hear that on draft days in the past, and it maybe didn't materialize. There weren't as many trades as was predicted. What is your thought going into tonight? All the smoke, do you think we'll see some fire and some fireworks tonight with some trades?
Yeah, it feels like every year there just becomes more smoke because everybody's got a damn dartboard, and they're just throwing things at the board to see what sticks. But, you know, I always go in and say, okay, when's the draft start? It's not at 1 this year. It's not at 2. Okay, to me, is it at 3 with New England? The Patriots shouldn't overthink it. They should stay there, take the quarterback they believe is the best of the remaining, you know, 4. Then Minnesota, keep an eye on them at 11. There's a reason they acquired 11 and 23. They feel that they'll probably have to move up for a quarterback. Then after that is, okay, the left tackles, the receiver being drafted. So I think there is a lot of intrigue after the first 2 picks, and it involves positions that aren't the quarterback. So, you know, there's always a lot of talk about the trades, but I do think this class is deep enough at receiver, at left tackle, and at corner, where if you need one of those spots, you may just sit tight and wait for somebody to come down to you.
Ryan, in your opinion, what does a good night for the Jaguars look like tonight?
Well, it sure as hell isn't taking a right tackle.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's what they'll do. You know, the Cam Robinson thing, okay, why did you sign him if you're looking to replace him? You know, so they'll have to figure that out if they do that. I mean, to me, from afar on the Jaguars is, they should have traded for Brandon Ayuk in March. That would have solved their problem there. They signed Gabe Davis from the Bills, who's a good player. But now looking tonight, they need a corner. I mean, I covered Ronald Darby in Denver. If he's the answer, I don't want to know what the question is. And because he's older, hasn't been able to stay on the field, and you play in a division right now where you're chasing a team that has Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, and other skill position players. So in Houston. So, and Michael Pittman is a good receiver in Indianapolis. Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins in Tennessee. So I think corner makes the most sense for the Jags at 17 if they stay there.
The one thing that helps them, Ryan, this year are the quarterbacks, right? We know 3 are going to definitely go. Probably McCarthy is 4. And then all this talk about Michael Penix potentially to Las Vegas, even Bo Nix in play, I guess. We're telling people here in Jacksonville, the more quarterbacks you see in the top 16, the more it's going to push those defensive guys down the board.
Yeah, I said last week, I think every quarterback's going to be gone by 15. I mean, that's probably not going to be a correct assessment. But if you're Denver at 12 and Las Vegas at 13, Hayes, you just mentioned it a minute ago, you might as well just take the guy if you believe in him. It's not about maximizing your draft capital and, you know, getting more points on the draft chart and winning the pick. If you feel you can build your organization around this quarterback, don't wait. Just take him. Get it over with. And to me, that's why Denver at 12 is an interesting team. The Zach Wilson trade has nothing to do with it. I mean, if he plays for the Broncos this year, they're in trouble. But is it Bo Nix or Michael Penix? You know, I think the Vikings will still have to trade up for J.J. McCarthy because I think the Broncos and Raiders are going to be positioned to move up and sacrifice that. So the more quarterbacks go, the better for the Jaguars. And, you know, looking at teams that need a receiver, after the 15th pick, the more quarterbacks that go early, those receivers start sliding down the board a little bit, and that's good news for teams like the Bills.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I was going to take you next. So Buffalo is picking 28th. If Brian Thomas is there at 17, could we see a Bills-Jaguar swap tonight?
You know, there's not a lot of history for moving up that far. The Bills do not have a third-round pick, so that you know impacts what they can do. You know, Brandon Bean has traded up in 4 of his 6 drafts in the first round. I think he just gets bored and wants to move up. So you've seen a lot of 28 to 17. I mean, is there a chance Brian Thomas could be there at 28?
Right.
I don't think so, but I think the more likely course for the Bills is to maybe move up 3 or 4 spots and get a receiver like Thomas. They did work out Leggett from South Carolina. They worked him out earlier in the week. I think that's a trade-down option tomorrow night and not at 28.
Ryan O'Halloran here with us. Ryan, every year there's a surprise. Either somebody goes way earlier than expected or somebody goes way later than expected. I guess it was Darnell Wright last year, right, when Chicago took him at number 10. That opened a lot of eyes, and there's seemingly one every year. Any scuttlebutt up there about who may go earlier than expected or who may fall much later than expected?
Well, Hayes, as you know, I'm just a country bumpkin here. I'm a local yokel. I'm not some big national guy who can, like, you know, get all these picks right. Hell, I couldn't even get on the media mock draft yesterday on 1010XL. Thanks a lot, Mia, but I digress. You know, if Latham goes ahead of Ault, what does that say? Because Joe Ault's sort of been the number one left tackle on the board for, what, 6 months since he declared he was leaving? To me, that would be the first surprise hack. And then after that is there – you mentioned Xavier Worthy. Some guys have him rated as a second-round receiver. He may get taken in the top 25 because a team will say, hey, he needs some sharpening, but he runs really, really fast. We can work with the other stuff, and he can take top off defense. So I think those are just two guys. And I'll give you one more. Is Latu, the pass rusher from UCLA. It's got to be a red flag with his medicals. You know, if you know he retired a couple years ago, had to get cleared after his transfer to UCLA. You know, somebody may take a flyer on him in the mid-20s, but I would be very concerned about that. Arizona may be a team for him since they have two first-round picks. So you take Harrison at four, then maybe you can take a little bit more of a risk later with Latu.
Brock Bowers is seemingly becoming one of the bigger wild cards tonight from the reports that are out there. What do you foresee happening with Bowers? Where does he end up?
Well, one thing you have heard is that maybe the Titans at seven. You know, they don't, you know, to add to their skill position. And this maybe and then they become a player to trade back in tonight to get a left tackle late in the first round. But I think a key part of this draft is 9 and 10. 9, Chicago, after they add Caleb Williams, is do they go offensive tackle or do they go with receiver? If they go offensive tackle, then Roman Dunze from Washington may be there for general manager Aaron Rodgers at 10 in the Jets. So I think they would run that card out. Now you have skill position galore with the Jets. If he's gone, I do think the Jets take Bowers. They have nothing at tight end right now. And he would be an instant weapon for Rodgers in the last couple of years of his career. And from a Jaguars fan perspective, that gets him out of the division because you got to think the Colts at 15 would be very interested in him if he makes it that far.
A couple of years ago, we saw A.J. Brown traded on draft night, and Tennessee fans still can't believe they did that, and it cost their GM their job. You mentioned Brandon Ayuk. Reports out that not only Ayuk but potentially Deebo Samuel are involved in conversations. The 49ers looking to move up in the draft. Outside of Ayuk or Samuel, any other big names, Ryan, that could catch people off guard? And do you think San Francisco will move one of their star receivers tonight?
That'd be still surprising. I mean, and I thought the 49ers may have misplayed this with Ayuk. Is you should have done it earlier, and get a package that includes a pick, because a lot of teams, Jaguars included, have spent their money. They've addressed their needs in free agency. And the problem with Ayuk isn't the skill set. He's obviously very talented, and it's not even the price that would take to acquire him. It's signing into a new deal. And that is a process. That rarely happens quickly, A.J. Brown being the exception. So, and I would not trade Deebo because, if you trade Ayuk, then you keep Deebo. If you can find a taker for Ayuk, I would keep both of them. But, you know, the big name was Diggs a couple weeks ago. So Trey Hendrickson's asked for a trade. Well, Mike Brown is not going to he's not going to grant that request. He's made that known. That's his history. So what you haven't heard today is veterans on the block. And maybe we see something come out of nowhere that really spices things up tonight in the first round.
What do you think about Jared Verse versus Dallas Turner?
Well, Versus production at Florida State was pretty eye-popping, and I don't watch a lot of college football because it is such an unwatchable product on television. That was a good line, guys.
I shook my head. People on the stream saw me.
But you watch Florida State, you always notice Verse, whereas Dallas Turner, he's probably going to go a lot higher. If I'm the Jaguars and Jared Verse is on the board, I would still go corner, but also somebody may be willing to trade up with you for Verse. So I think they're going to get a good player that's been productive, even though teams have allocated a lot of their game plan toward him. But I mean, this is going to be an interesting Florida State weekend with all the guys. I mean, half their roster was at the combine compared to the Gators, where, you know, Hayes was had Ricky Pearsall, for crying out loud.
Hey, and Aguacan. Don't forget him.
Yeah, Aguacan's a good player. Hey, Ryan, you know, 2019, there were 140 underclassmen that declared for the draft. This year, there were like 51. The power of NIL, the power of the transfer portal. And by all indications, you know, you get past, you know, the middle part of round five, I've heard the talent pool plummets this year. So a lot of teams are going to want to move up, but I don't know how many teams are going to want to stockpile picks in rounds 5, 6, and 7 if this class towards the back end is as weak as I've been led to believe.
Yeah, and that's I mean, you could see a scenario like early on Saturday where a team like Baltimore says, give you a 3-7 for your late fifth. And, you know, and a team, a rebuilding team may say, hey, we'll take it. You know, maybe one of them will develop into a guy we can keep on the 53. But, yeah, that's going to be, it's going to be interesting because if a team wants to trade down, you're not going to entice them by saying, we're going to give you a 6th and a 7th. The only reason, you know, unless you want to say that team says, well, maybe there's a pocket of players in the 5th round that they can go back up. So I do think it impacts it. I mean, and this is pretty much the last draft of the COVID year. So I think next year you'll get somewhat back to normal. And I think teams will have a really good grasp on who's not going to come out because, you know, let's face it, a lot of these college kids that stayed, they would have taken a pay cut to come to the NFL. I think they made the right decision staying put in college.
Did you get any impressions from seeing, I guess, what is there, 13 players in Detroit attending the draft and they met with media yesterday? Did you get any sense from talking to any of these guys? Anything stand out to you?
Really impressed by Latu. And I wanted to visit with him because he visited the Bills during the upper a top 30 visit. And so I wanted to just get in his background a little bit. You know, you have 13 guys here tonight. He's probably the best, you know, story in terms of human interest because of his injury, had to retire, come back. One thing that stands out about Brian Thomas, he is a big rig compared to Malik Nabers. It looked like sort of a redshirt sophomore college receiver compared to a high school junior receiver. Nabers, a lot, you know, I thought it was significantly smaller in stature than Brian Thomas. So those are the two guys I visited with. And then the other guy I was really impressed with was Adunze. And he expects to go in the top 10 tonight. And one thing about Rome is that he committed to Washington. They changed coaches. He stuck with Washington. He was at Washington. They changed coaches. He stuck with Washington. I think that impresses teams how he's willing to deal with adversity that is not of his making.
Great stuff, man. We really appreciate it. Have a wonderful time up there, and we will certainly look forward to having you back on down the road. You're our favorite country bumpkin.
All right, fellas. Take care. I suppose I better head over there now.
All right. Thanks, Ryan.
See ya.
All right. That was Ryan O'Halloran, again, of the Buffalo News. You can read his columns at Ryan O'Halloran.
You know, and we're going to have Mike DiRocco on as we get close to the 6 o'clock hour here. Again, the draft special at 8, end of the night with Rick Ballew is 6 to 8. There is, I mean, look, if you follow people on social media, national people, the name Jaguars and the verbiage trading up continues
it's
to pop up.
All over the place.
There's, again, more reports in the last literally 90 seconds. Growing conversation in the last few days. Jacksonville very active, making calls, trying to trade up for what is believed to be a top offensive player. Again, I'll see it or I'll believe it when I see it, but there's an awful lot of smoke 2.5 hours out from the draft.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We will get Michael DiRocco, D-Rock's opinion on that. He will join us next. You are listening to The Frangie Show on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American.
If this doesn't sum up Mike DiRocco, I don't know what does.
Oh, you got to love that, folks. Welcome back to the Frangie Show. Hacker, J.J. LaSalva, I'm Hayes Carline with you, and we are pleased to be joined with ESPN's Michael DiRocco. D-Rock, how are you doing?
I'm good, fellas. How are you?
So great. The draft is finally here, and man, the Jaguars draft speculation is really hitting a whole new level, D-Rock. as we get a few hours from this thing starting, what's your perspective on where the Jaguars sit and what they are probably trying to get accomplished?
I'm hearing more momentum for J.J. McCarthy, you know, and if he's unavailable, Michael Penick, I think, is where they're headed. You know, I mean, look, this is the fun part of draft day is everything just starts flying around in the last hours beforehand. And, oh, maybe they'll trade up and they'll take one of the receivers. Oh, wait, now isn't the latest thing Brock Bowers potentially is a target for this team? I think if they stay put at 17, I think they go with the corner. If they move up, I think it's wide open at that point. I just look at this team, and Hayes and I has talked with me about that. We've talked about this in the media room all the time where it's like, can they line up today and play? And if they did, where are they the weakest? And I think we could probably agree that one of the two spots where they're the weakest would be at corner. And so I think that's where they go if they stay at 17.
D-Rock, I agree. Terry and Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell, if they're there at 17, I think that's the pick. That's the easy pick. My question is, what would they do if Arnold and Mitchell were both gone? But back to the speculation, I mean, this is within the last 5 minutes. I mean, all these national people from Diana Rossini to Jordan Schultz to Ari Mirov, I mean, they're all tweeting out simultaneously that the Jaguars are currently very active on the phones. Rumor has it they're trying to get up to get a top pass catcher. I don't know if they will do it. I would tend to doubt it. But, man, there is an awful lot of smoke here 2.5 hours before the draft.
Yeah, and the question then becomes, well, how high up do you have to go to get one of those guys? You know, do you have to go into the top 10 or can you wait and get only – can you go to 11 or 12 and still get one of those guys? Which one are they in love with? You know what I mean? Is it Malik Nabers? Do they want to go up and get him? It's all – this is the time of year until the draft starts. I believe 10% of what I read and hear when it comes to draft rumors and everything. Everything's getting put out there. People are doing other people favors. There's smoke screens all over the place. Look, if that's the case and that's what they do, then their philosophy for 2024 is going to be, we're just going to outscore people. We are just going to put as many weapons as we can around Trevor Lawrence. And we're going to go all in on offense. And we think we can be okay with what we have defensively. We'll shore that up in the second, third round, maybe a corner then. And we'll be playing with the lead a bunch, so that'll be to our advantage. But that's kind of what we thought was going to happen last year, too, when they brought in Calvin Ridley, and it didn't ever materialize. So, you know, it's such a deep group of receivers, too, that it's not out of the question for them to find a guy who turns into a Pro Bowler in the second round. Puka Nacua was, what, a fourth-round pick?
Yeah, maybe even
talented,
fifth.
Yeah, there's talented guys out there that you can get in the back, you know, the middle rounds of this draft. But, boy, it would be fun if they managed to pull that trade off and they're up there, you know, 6 or 7. But, you know, to go from 17 into the top 10, that's a pretty big haul. It might end up costing you two number ones. And is Trent Baalke willing to pay that price?
That's the thing, because I don't think this team is really equipped to handle the infrastructure of what that deal would cost. I mean, I understand it in that if you are drafting a superstar receiver, certainly that makes your team better. But they haven't done a great job through the draft over the last 4 or 5 years. So to me, it's not like you've got a lot of good talent that still has another 2 or 3 years on a rookie contract. You know, they've got a lot of free agents on this team. They've got a lot of big contracts. They're going to be obviously doing Trevor Lawrence's contract. It just, to me, seems like if you're going to make this move, do you have enough of a nucleus to justify it, you know, in terms of the long term of where this roster will be in, you know, a year or two when, you know, the guys like Robertson Harris and, you know, possibly Christian Kirk and Zay Jones, and, you know, you're going to have a lot of veterans that are going to cycle out.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, that would be a move for 2024.
that would be saying almost we're going all in on 2024. And, you know, you mentioned the draft and the lack of young building block, young players. I mean, last year's draft outside of Anton Harrison gave them essentially nothing. You know, you hate to say it this way, but you don't want to be safe in the draft. But this team needs to stockpile a few more young, talented players, not necessarily Pro Bowlers, not necessarily, you know, guys that are going to be all pros. But, man, take the safe pick, the guys that you feel like can really make an impact for you, instead of going up and trying to grab the big-time player and then leaving yourself short. Because, again, I think it might take next year's number one to get into the top 10. Now, if they're just going from 17 to, like, 12 or 11, that's a different story. But if you're trying to get into that top 10, that's going to be a huge price to pay. And it's almost like you're saying, you know what, we are all in on 2024 and we'll figure it out afterwards. And that's really not the way you want to kind of build sustainable success.
Couple more from Mike DiRocco of ESPN.com. And the thing to remember, DiRocco, I know you know this, any trade-up scenario, you got to wait and see who's there, right? I can't imagine if the Jaguars pull this off, that's going to be announced in the next 15 minutes. I mean, if you want Malik Nabers, well, you got to make sure Malik Nabers is there at 7 or 8 to actually go up and get him. Top 5 picks in the top 116. The Jaguars have 8 picks overall, Mike. To me, any combination, if they keep all their picks – wide receiver, corner, O-line, D-line. Those are the 4 positions to me that you have to hit in the first 5 picks. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and, you know, whether it's an interior defensive lineman or an edge rusher, yeah, on the defensive line. But it's a big man's game. It really is. And I think we could put tape on of last year's season all year, and we can see the 2 of the areas where they were the most efficient is – offensive line and defensive line in terms of the physicality. I mean, they got bullied on both sides of the line of scrimmage. So that's an area that they need to address. Adding Eric Armstead certainly helps, but getting another interior defensive lineman, whether that's, you know, a Murphy, I mean, it just, they've got to bolster both offensive and defensive lines. And I don't know if that means, like I said, an edge rusher, or is it Byron Murphy? Either or, but that has to be the first 4 picks. If they don't come out of the first 2 days of the draft or the first 4 rounds of the draft with 4 players at those positions, there better be some ungodly reason why that somebody that they couldn't believe fell and they had to end up grabbing that guy instead. Otherwise, you know, I wouldn't look at this as a successful draft.
You think there's any chance that they end up actually trading back, even though all the scuttlebutt right now is that they're aggressively looking to move up?
Yeah, I mean, it depends, obviously. Look, is the run on receivers, the run on offensive linemen, and then the quarterbacks, and if they're sitting at 17 and it looks like they could get one of those 2 corners, whether it's Arnold or Mitchell, then I wouldn't be surprised to see them drop down a couple of picks. But the risk you take there is don't try and get too cute and figure you can drop down into the mid-20s and risk losing your guy. But I would more expect them to trade back than I would expect them to trade up.
And that's what we saw Trent Baalke do that last year. And I agree. I mean, if Arnold and Mitchell are gone and you stay at 17, I don't know if Nate Wiggins, Kool-Aid McKinstry, or DeJean from Iowa warrants the 17th pick in the draft. So at that point, you may need to trade back a little bit. Mike, it's not a 1-year proposition, right? It's a 5- to 10-year proposition. We know Cam Robinson and Walker Little are scheduled to become free agents at the end of the year. I mean, how much is offensive tackle potentially in play in round number 1?
Probably more than we've spoken about over the last month or so. My only question is, if you take the offensive tackle at 17, for example, or you move up and you take him, what are you doing now? Which one of those other guys is not playing? Are you drafting this guy to be a starter right away? Does that mean Cam is now on the bench? Or are you planning to unload Cam? Are you planning to trade him? I hope someone, you know, on another team gets hurt and you can unload him in training camp. Because there's a real possibility that you could take the guy at, if you trade up, let's say to 12 or whatever, and you take one of those tackles, there's a real possibility he might not play this year. So does that help you at all this year? Look, they have to plan for the future, absolutely. But I would hope if you're the Jaguars that you want to get an impact player in the first round that helps you now and helps you in a division that is going to be one of the most competitive in the league and is way better than we all thought it ever would be at this point, you know, when we were talking about the draft last year.
Yeah, great point. All right, D-Rock, final thing for us. We appreciate your time. What's your prediction? What do you think happens tonight? Who's going to be the next Jacksonville Jaguar?
I think they're going to end up with either Arnold or Mitchell. In our ESPN mock draft, I was, you know, speaking with our Colts guy, and it sort of played out the way he and I thought, is that the Colts at 15 ended up taking Mitchell, and that left Arnold for the Jaguars to take two picks later. So I kind of think that's the way it's going to play out tonight.
Awesome, man. Well, D-Rock, we can't thank you enough for your time. I look forward to seeing you over there in a little bit, man. And great stuff. We always appreciate your time and your coverage.
All right, let's get it going, Hayes. We only got 12 more hours till we're done for the first round, right?
Yeah, and tell Gene to stop throwing things around in the background in the media center. I want it to be clean when I get in there.
Yeah, that was actually Baselli, believe it or not.
Oh, shock.
Looking around here. He was looking at the food and was clanking around in here. So,
okay.
Yeah, apologies for the Hall of Fame.
No, not at all. It was fun. All right, man, look forward to seeing you over there in a little bit. Thanks so much.
See you guys.
All right, when we come back, we will wrap up this edition of the Frangie Show, get you ready for Into the Night with Rick Ballew, and then, of course, our Jaguars draft coverage, Frank Frangie, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Loggeman bringing that to you from 8 to midnight. You're listening to the Frangie Show on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Welcome back to the Frangie Show. JJ LaSelva, Hacker. I am Hayes Carline. We're getting you all set for Into the Night with Rick Ballew starting in about 10 minutes, and that'll take you into our Jaguar draft coverage. Frank Frangie, Tony Baselli, and Jeff Loggeman bringing that to you from 8 o'clock until probably right around midnight. So it will be fascinating. Hacker, boy, the buzz is just incredible right now for the Jaguars in terms of the national reporters. One thing that we're seeing is the Aiyuk trade possibility. Do you like the idea of the Jaguars trading for Aiyuk, giving up 17, but getting San Francisco's first-round pick at 31? Would you like that move down 14, get Aiyuk, and maybe you have to give up the 48, the second rounder?
Yeah, I would do 17 and 48 for Aiyuk and 31. There's no question about that. And apparently San Francisco, based on reports, what you want to believe 2 hours before the draft, not only Aiyuk but Deebo Samuel. They're talking to teams about both of their guys. It seems like they're going to trade one of those guys sooner rather than later, and
tonight,
sooner might be in a couple hours.
I think so, too.
I don't think it'll be Jacksonville, just because it's not that I don't want to get my hopes up necessarily. If Jacksonville wanted to do that, it feels like they could have done that.
Right.
And they chose not to a month ago. What would change now? But there is a lot of smoke around the Niners and both of those wide receivers.
Well, imagine if they were able to consummate this kind of a deal. So you move down, you get Brandon Aiyuk. Let's start with that. So you get somebody who just turned 26, who is capable of giving you 1,300 yards and 8-9 touchdowns. Somebody that would be going into the prime of his career with Trevor Lawrence. So that obviously, you love that aspect. You'd have to pay him, but they have the ability to do that. And then at 31, you're probably still in the running for a Kool-Aid McKinstry.
Yeah, you get your Nate Wiggins, you get your corner at 31. If they came out of here with Brandon Aiyuk and Kool-Aid McKinstry, there needs to be cigars.
Yeah, that'd be a walk-off grand slam,
yes,
in my
it would
opinion.
Be.
Yeah, so let's wrap up here with just our final thoughts. So what do you think actually happens tonight?
I think all of this is smoke. Fire does not materialize, and the Jaguars stay at 17. And whoever's there between Terry and Arnold and Quinyon Mitchell, and I think they need to address corner, that will be the Jaguars pick here at about 10 o'clock or 10:15.
Yeah, we're getting close to it. JJ, what do you think?
Yeah, I think they'll go with the cornerback from Cincinnati, probably.
From Cincinnati?
Isn't that his name? Isn't that where he's from?
Or Toledo.
Oh, you're talking about Quinyon Mitchell. Yeah, Toledo. He's from Toledo.
Ohio.
I would tend to agree. I mean, I think that Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell will be there. In the mock that I did, I had Arnold going actually the pick before the Jaguars to Seattle, but Quinyon Mitchell on the board at 17, and the Jaguars take him. I had Verse going 18th, so that would be certainly a discussion point as well. I mean, I'd I'd love to see that, particularly if they're going to move Trayvon Walker inside more than what we've seen. But it'll be a lot of fun. We're all expecting corner, Mark Long, D-Rock. That's sort of what they predicted as well. So it should be a lot of fun. You're going to have Dave Campo tomorrow night, right?
Yeah, tomorrow night, Hacker After Dark, 8 to 10 during rounds 2 and rounds 3 of the draft. The head coach, Dave Campo, will be in studio with me breaking down every pick.
That is awesome. Hacker, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hayes, appreciate it, brother.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for us. Into the Night with Rick Ballew coming up next. You're listening to 1010XL, 92.5 FM.